Our next speaker is Dr. Jean-Vivien Momboly. He's the director of the Department of Research and Production of the National Laboratory for Public Health of Congo and assistant professor at Marian Ngouabi University in Brazzaville, Congo. Dr. Momboly received his PhD in molecular physiology and pharmacology in France. He has written over 22 original research articles and 6 book chapters, and is another world-renowned authority on the topics that we're discussing in this session. He's going to help us address the political and socioeconomic perspectives that Ebola brings to bear. Dr. Momboly.
Thank you very much for the kind words. I must say that probably like some of you, I'm quite surprised to be invited here. I would assume that when Paul suggested this crazy idea to the organizers, he was probably thinking that, well, it would be nice to have Jean-Vivien go back to his roots. And my roots are here in Manhattan, where I was, where I did my elementary school in a school for diplomat children, not far from here on Lexington Avenue and 57 East. So, and I also think that probably Paul likes me a lot because basically I bring together so many cultures. Think about it. Raised in New York, with of course some attitude problems, and then we continue in Pierre Fomenti's country, France. You know I have attitude problems there too. And finally, I decide after a long trip in Texas to go back home in 2000 and try to see if I can contribute. And of course, Pierre has told you that we've had repeated outbreaks of Ebola in Congo. So obviously, one would like to contribute in that area as well. That's where I began reading heavily about Ebola and trying to think of what kind of contribution I may make. And having spent most of my scientific career in vascular biology, I'm trying to convince everybody that Ebola is a vascular disease. And in fact, it so happens that some of the cures that are proposed are going into that direction. However, since Dr. Koresh asked me to speak of social and economic and political impacts of Ebola, I think I'm pretty qualified since, as a naive person in my own country, I have, let's say, a Western perspective on how people behave in those areas in Congo. So, as you see in the first slide, Ebola obviously is an endemic public health problem in Congo. The border between the Congo and Gabon has witnessed the most frequent appearances of this very, very deadly virus. And so we can say that the problem is there to remain. Other areas of the world where Ebola has appeared, which include Kikwit and Yamboku in Democratic Republic of Congo, not too far from where the outbreaks have occurred in the Congo-Gabon border. So basically, we can say that Ebola is really a monopoly for the Congo River Basin. However, there are some difficulties for a scientist who is interested in this, in learning about this disease, in the sense that the virus is so effective in killing that basically you have very, very little time to collect samples and establish the pathophysiological history of the disease. And also, the disease occurs in an area of the world where, let me put it this way, people have a culture of islanders. In other words, they are so isolated from the rest of the world that they have very, very strong beliefs. And in my country, most of the people think that you never die from a microbe or a virus or anything like that. Most of the times when you die, there's an evil spirit that is involved in your death. And Ebola probably is a very, very good case for that, since it kills very swiftly. The death is very, very horrible, which is typical of what evil spirits do to you, as you know. However, the concern about Ebola is heightened by the fact that In the Congo River Basin, you have a very important concentration of population, which is the Stanley and Livingston Pool, where you have on one side Brazzaville and the other side Kinshasa. And that's probably the only area of that region of the world where you have actually 12 million people living there. And it's not rare at all to find bushmeat in either Brazzaville or Kinshasa. Especially in Congo following the Civil War, most of the food coming into Brazzaville and Kinshasa originate from the northern part of the country, which ecologists tell us are the areas of high risk for Ebola. So basically, what I'm suggesting to you is that we might experience an outbreak of Ebola in either Kinshasa or Brazzaville sometime in the future. So being prepared for that is very, very important. Well, what would be the economic impact of Ebola epidemics? Obviously, it would provide for awful publicity to have an Ebola outbreak. It so happens that my brother is the ambassador of Congo here in the United States. And at the time where we had the second Ebola outbreak, he was trying to convince the Reynolds family to come and invest in Congo. So obviously they postponed that trip. So that's a good illustration to show that if we're talking about economic development, Ebola probably represents a major obstacle that has to be overcome. Dr. Koresh made a very, very compelling case on the usefulness of bushmeat in the nutrition of Congolese in rural areas. And also one of the impacts whenever we have an outbreak is that the people are totally dependent on external food for their subsistence. So during the entire outbreak, which sometimes lasts 2 to 3 months, people are being fed from outside, which doesn't really sit well with their own culture because they're used to going to feed for themselves. So it's really, really difficult economic situation. And plus they find the other food that are being imported from outside very, very bland, not very tasty. And they're not very crazy about sardines or things like that, which is quite understandable. But and with regards to ape or primate meat, it seems that it's sort of a macho thing, as we would call it probably here, for young men to prove their bravery to go out and hunt down a gorilla and eat the meat in some parts of Congo. So that's probably one source of Ebola outbreak that might be difficult to get rid of because, when young men get to become men, they want to prove that they are tough guys all around the world. So obviously here in Congo, we'll have a problem trying to get rid of that traditional custom. And finally, I think an important thing to outline here is that Ebola outbreaks affect women a lot since they are the ones processing the meat. And whenever death occurs, Dr. Fromenty stressed that most of the time Congolese people, African people, like to express their sorrow very, very physically. And so they basically lay down on the dead person. For women, for instance, it's very, very common to shave your hair off and walk around naked, basically, just to show how sorrowful you are. And so during those outbreaks, having a safe funeral is really, really a challenge. As I said, the women are mostly affected. And people have a hard time changing their nutritional habits because of all the tradition around the bush meat. And so sometimes they're being very, very creative and trying to find scapegoats or trying to turn the interdiction of bushmeat consumption around and first people to be accused are often ecologists and conservationists. And the argument here is that they say that, well, we've been eating this meat for ages and nothing ever happened. Keeping in mind that whenever somebody dies, it's never of a pathogen, it's always from an evil spirit. But then they'll say that if there is Ebola, that foreigners have introduced it, and most of the times it's either ecologists or Red Cross people or other people who are actually coming in to help and do some communication for behavior change activities. And after the outbreaks or during the outbreaks, one social issue that is very important is that families are being stigmatized. And this is very, very discouraging, of course, because not only have you suffered loss of either your wife or your sister, then you have to go throughout your life in the village being stigmatized because the Ebola curse has struck your family, and probably you might have it, or the next outbreak might come from you. So obviously efforts of educating people need to be permanent almost. I think that's one of the things that at least I remember from Michel Epelboin's movies that we've viewed in Brazzaville, where people were complaining that during outbreaks, the experts and all that flocked into the area, but in between outbreaks there were no more activities. So people tend to lose trust in whatever they were taught. Then you have to start the process of education all over again. From a political perspective, I must say that we've been trying to do a little bit of lobbying work with the political leadership. And even though initially this Ebola problem seemed to have been taken very lightly, in recent outbreaks, particularly under the leadership of the Minister of Health, Dr. Alain Moka, the Ebola issue has been very, very high on people's minds in government. So if we are thinking of having capacity strengthening activities or permanent activities on Ebola issues, I think we'll have at least their political support. And at the national level, the parliamentary representatives from the Cuvette West and other areas at risk of Ebola outbreaks have formed a sort of lobby group, which is very, very active. So that's very, very positive. However, one of the Ebola outbreaks occurred during an election period. And at that time, people in those areas used that to smear their opponents. I'm sure that John Kerry would love to say that George Bush is responsible for an Ebola outbreak over here, but you can imagine the disastrous effect on people campaigning during that time. And in those areas, people can get very, very violent, especially if they feel threatened in their lives by some kind of curse. We've had some field workers, some laboratory technicians, who've been beaten nearly to death because people were thinking that they were working for one of the politicians accused of witchcraft. So this is a very, very serious matter. And of course, this puts the danger of both volunteers and healthcare providers during an outbreak. And this probably would put them at risk as well during in-between activities that we're planning to put together. Well, as said in your introduction, I work at the National Laboratory of Public Health. Congo has experienced a civil war from 1997 to 1999, and this has led to the fleeing of a lot of qualified people, especially at the laboratory. And on the contrary, some of us decided to return home at that time. And this includes the general director, Professor Paré, and myself. Unfortunately, this means as well that there's a lot of capacity building need here, both in equipment, because everything was looted during the Civil War, and also in personnel training. So as you can see, we have listed a few of our missions. And aside from the tribal medicine and immunization and diagnostic biomedical testing, which is partially restored, the rest is really a work that needs to be done or that is in progress. What can be said of the National Laboratory can also be said of the entire sanitary system in Congo, which needs really a lot of revamping. We've proposed a plan to the government, which is being examined and probably would be adopted in its principal lines. We would like to develop a coordinated surveillance system, treat the Ebola issue more as a permanent issue, and then develop research programs into that issue. And of course, due to the lack of personnel, both at the National Laboratory and even at the university, it would be very, very important for us to have the support of other groups or organizations such as WCS, ICOFAC, and of course people at WHO, in order to get things moving. Of course, there are a lot of things that have been published in the literature regarding vaccine and treatment. And it would be important for us to be able to benefit from those advances. And recently I had the chance of being invited over at NIH and had discussions with Dr. Gary Naples' group on the possibility of implementing some vaccine trials that would be very, very important in protecting healthcare providers, especially in those high-risk areas. Unfortunately, the environment in Congo is not very, very favorable for our research as of now. Not that people don't want to do research, it's just that, you know, when you want to do something, you want to do it the right way from the start. And so we still have some regulation to put in place, such as ethics committees and review boards, so that once we get started, things are done properly. Dr. Romati has touched on this, so I won't dwell on it too much, but we would like to have the ability to develop mobile laboratory facilities so that we could sort of move around the country and assess the Ebola risk throughout Congo. Because it seems amazing to me that it's only the Cuvette West that has been affected so far, and other areas will not be affected. Either indeed Ebola does not appear in those areas, or maybe we could have some strains that are a little bit different and less lethal that are existing in those areas. So it would be interesting for us to be able to investigate those hypotheses. Finally, we would like to have a clinical trial facility but set somewhere in the northern part of Congo where Ebola is supposed to be at high risk, so that we will be able to test for safety of new treatments that are being published, so that basically whenever the next big Ebola outbreak comes, well, at least we have some solutions to suggest to the patients. Because so far, really, what the brave clinicians do is to cross fingers and wait to see if the individual makes it on his own. Finally, we would like to stress that the development of Congo and the Congo River Basin countries relies heavily on oil so far, but as oil is going to be going down, it's going to rely more and more on timber. And that means that people are going to be working more and more in areas at risk. Plus, ecotourism, of course, is also a strategy for development. It should be a very attractive one. However, like Dr. Perez said, it's very important that we make sure that people don't get sick because they want to go do tourism. All in all, this means that there's a multi-sector, multidisciplinary approach that needs to be adopted That's why I'm very, very glad that I've been invited to this conference. Thank you very much.